Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today's another edition of Garden Talk, and we have Kristen Krukowski, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, on the line with us. Kristen, it's a pleasure to have some time with you today.
Glad to be here.
Along with maple trees' leaves turning black, what are the most frequent gardening problems you're hearing about these days?
Oh, I think every other call right now is Japanese beetles.
Japanese beetles. Yes, they go right to the top of the list of unwanted insects, huh?
Oh, and we had a really good winter for them again this year, so they should be in big populations this year.
What advice do you give when people say, how do I get rid of them?
The first thing we advise people do is not put out traps. The research has showed that if you put a trap in your yard, you're going to get four times as many beetles.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to dissuade people from doing that. I know that they really enjoy kind of killing the beetles and seeing them in there, and it gives them a sense of accomplishment, but it's really not helping their plants.
All right. Let's take some phone calls, and if you'd like to join in, we've got a couple of lines open. It's 1-800-642-1234. Of course, that's statewide, and email address talk@wpr.org. Jill is on the phone from Watertown, and Jill, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I have a question about my birch tree. It's a clump. It has three trunks, and at the very top of the tree, it looks like it's dying, and there's no leaves at the top. And the other day in that storm, some branches fell down from it, and I saw holes. It looked like the woodpeckers were pecking at it, because I didn't see any bugs at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first question is, where do you live?
I live next to Rock River in Watertown.
Okay, do you know what kind of soil you have?
What kind of what?
Soil.
Soil.
Is it sandy
soil?
Or clay?
Oh,
or?
Yeah, I did check my soil, and it has a lot of acid. It was high in acid and low in everything else.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a good start when we're talking about birch trees. My other question is where is it planted?
It's right in my yard, but right next to it is a giant silver maple.
So would you say that the root zone's getting some good shade on it? It's not like in full sun?
No, it's not in full sun.
Okay.
No.
How often do you water it?
I don't water it.
Okay, that might be a problem. Birches, do you know if it's a paper birch or a river birch? Does it have a white bark or if it's the flaky brown bark?
No, it's white.
Okay, so you have a paper birch. And paper birches and river birches are both near-stream species. They really like their soil, kept on the cool and damp side. So whenever we see them used, especially if somebody puts them in the middle of the front of their yard where they don't get any shade, they die much more quickly. I'm in southeast Wisconsin, and we joke that the average lifespan of a paper birch here is about 8 years because they just don't do well here.
Mm-hmm.
So
what
I would do is you might want to have somebody come out and check and see if you have something called bronze birch borer. When birch trees are under stress, they send out some kind of attractant that attracts this little borer to it, and what they'll do is they basically start feeding on stressed trees. So your goal is going to be to get your tree out of stress. So that's going to require you to water it 1 inch of water every week until the ground freezes. And basically, you want to do that and just subtract out whatever the rainfall is. So if you get a half an inch of rain and we're not expecting more rain the rest of the week, just put another half inch on right then. And that will help get it out of the stress. But you probably need somebody to come out and look at it to determine if you need some kind of insecticide treatment. And they'll do that systemically. So they'll put something, either a drench in the ground, or put it directly into the tree, and it'll go on the inside of the tree because the birch borers are actually inside. And that would explain woodpecker damage because the woodpeckers will go after the insects in the tree.
Oh, okay.
So I would have somebody come out and look at it to see if you need to treat with an insecticide, but if you're just noticing the top right now and it doesn't seem, really widespread, you probably still have a really good chance of treating it and taking care of the problem.
Okay.
Okay, well, good luck.
And
you had a
question about your elm tree as well.
Yes, I do. At the bottom of the tree, the bark is coming off of the trunk. There's like a little hollow hole in there.
Oh, I'm not sure exactly what that could be. I mean, it might be just be some kind of structural defect. How old is the tree?
Well, it's pretty tall. We just bought that place like 3 years ago, and it's about 20 feet tall.
And did you just start noticing it recently, or do you think it's been there?
I just noticed it a couple weeks ago, but it could have been there a long time, yes.
Okay, I would just take a look at it, make sure you don't see any kind of rot or anything like that. If you don't see anything decaying in there and you don't see any kind of obvious damage and it seems like it's just structurally sound, then I wouldn't worry about it. But if you see any kind of rot, if you're having somebody else to look at your out to look at your birch tree, I would have them look at that too.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, Jill, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you as we continue with Chris Krokowski, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. And Chuck is next in Waukesha. Hello, Chuck.
Good morning. I have a question about the jack-in-the-pulpits. I see they have the green berries now where the pulpit is, and they turn red as fall comes along. Can I bury these berries in the ground to increase the population of jack-in-the-pulpits?
If it's in an area that the jack-in-the-pulpits are growing really well now, then I don't see why not.
Okay,
I think that's a good way.
I do have. They seem to be multiplying every year, and I tried that last year to bury them. And I even put little stakes in the ground where I had them buried to see if they'd come up, but nothing happened to develop where I thought I buried them. So I just wondered if it was a frugal effort, or I'll try it again this year if that's something that can happen.
Yeah, some plants are just better propagated, you know, by either cuttings or dividing and things like that, and some of them do just fine from seed. And I guess I'm not, you know, familiar enough with Jack in the Pulpit to know if you're going to have a really good success rate, but it's not a lot of an effort I would give it a try.
All right, Chuck, thanks very much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. And Jilly is next in Waterloo. Jilly, where are you from?
Yes, Jilly, Wanderoos.
Wanderoos. And where is Wanderoos?
Wanderoos is about 11 miles southeast of Osceola in the St. Croix River.
We hear about communities we've never heard of before time and again. This is another one. What's on your mind?
Well, I have what I believe to be a beginner's question, which I am, but I'm receiving conflicting answers from local greenhouses. With doing a vegetable garden, horse manure, cow manure, if it is cow manure, how long does it need to be on the ground before it's safe to plant the vegetables?
Usually there are two different kinds of manure, and one is composted and one is not. So you can go to a garden center and buy composted manure, and that should have been aged at least a year before you get it, and you can use that right away. But if you're using just straight manure,
yes,
the best thing to do is to apply it in the fall, incorporate it into the area you're going to use it, and then let it sit and kind of mellow all winter. Because if you use manure straight away and plant in it, there's so much nitrogen available in that, it will burn your plants.
Okay. And raw horse manure, you can use right away?
No, you should wait on that, too. I mean, both
really
have really high nitrogen content. Chicken manure is the same.
Okay.
Manure, when it comes right out of the animal, is what we call hot, so it's got a lot of nitrogen available right away. So it really is best to compost it or to incorporate it in advance of using it.
Well, great. Thank you. You've educated me. Jim, if I may, I would like to say good day to Earl and Gloria, who are up at enjoying the weekend at Diamond Lake.
No, we can't do that kind of thing.
Too late.
All right, Jilly, thanks very much for the call. 1-800-642-1234. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Gail in De Pere next. Hello, Gail.
Hi. I have a catalpa tree that's probably 10 to 12 years old. The trunk diameter is about 10 inches. And this spring, when it leafed out, the leaves did not open up. They remained cupped. The tree flowered just as well as it always does. And the new growth, the new leaves that are emerging, are fully open. Also, what we notice is the very top of the tree died. It's in a protected area, sandy soil, and we have, because we have not been getting any rain up here, we've been watering it to get the inch of water a week since spring now, and I'm just wondering if that's just maybe the leaves got a touch of late frost, or if that's a symptom of a more serious problem off the tree.
No, I would be concerned. Being that it's in a protected area and you have, you know, watering now probably won't take care of the past problem, but I would suspect that whatever is going on, you know, started a year or two ago. But being that it's in a protected area, it's a hardy tree here in Wisconsin, so I wouldn't expect frost or, you know, many environmental stresses to really have an effect on it. Is it in an open location?
No, actually, it's about 20 feet behind a building, and on two sides of the building were spruce trees that were originally planted when we bought the home. And so that trunk is probably a good, again, 12, 15 feet away from the spruce trees.
And the home has been there for a while?
Trees. Pardon?
Is it a home that's been there for a while? It's not...
77.
Okay.
Our house was built. But I said, we think we put the tree in about 12 years ago.
And the soil seemed fine when you put it in.
Right. As I said, it's just that it's, you know, we have that backyard area of ours is very sandy. So we always, when we know we're not getting any rain, we start dropping the trickle hoses on our trees.
So even a couple years ago, you had already started watering?
Oh, yes, yes.
I would have somebody come out and look at it.
Okay. I do some searches on the internet, and it talks about an insect, a pest, and a disease. But you know, then it references the southern catalpas, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this tree. And you know, as I said,
but you bought that tree here
in Wisconsin. Oh yes.
Yeah. So I would expect that there's something more going on, just because you know a little bit of dieback and some strange things with the leaves. If you hadn't been watering it, because I know you haven't gotten a ton of rain, I would think that it was that. But since you've been watering, I think somebody probably needs to come out and take out a look at the roots, because I'd be worried about there might be some kind of something going on with the roots. But there just aren't a lot of diseases and insect pests that really attack catalpas, so I'd have somebody look at it.
Okay, all right, I will do so.
Okay, Gail, thanks for the call. The number for you, 1-800-642-1234. We're talking with Kristen Krokowski, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. Rachel Owens is our on-air producer today. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard with you on Garden Talk. Glad to have you along this morning as we talk about gardening with Kristen Krokowski from Waukesha County. And we'll take some more calls and go to Chris in East Spooner. Hello, Chris. What's on your mind today?
Hi. We got a seasonal cabin north of Spooner in the Sand Barrens area, and put a new staircase in from the cabin down to the lake, and want to know what kind of ground cover I can plant in there to prevent erosion on the sides of the staircase. And, of course, it is real sandy soil. Real sparse grass grows now. We only mow once or twice a year. Any suggestions?
Mostly shady.
Yes, it is. It is mostly shady.
And at this point, there's a ton of stuff at the garden centers now. And you might just want to go to a local garden center to make sure I don't give you something that's out of your grow zone. But there's a ton of little low-growing plants called steppables that are really great. And then you don't have to worry about if people need to walk on them or anything like that. But, I'm not sure as a specific recommendation. I'm sure you're going to be able to find three or four really good ones at any local garden center.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Chris, good luck to you. Appreciate your call. Peggy's next in Manitowoc. Peggy, what can we do for you?
Hi. I have a Japanese plum tree that is at least 8 years old. We bought the house, and it was in the west, or in our front yard. It faces west. And it appears that it's slowly dying. We have one branch now that's completely dead. But we do have new growth on the other branches, and I'm wondering if you have any information on pests that attack Japanese plum or any suggestions.
And where do you live?
In Manitowoc, along the lakeshore.
So do you know what your grow zone is by any chance? Are you one of the warmer people? Because some of that lakeshore area, you guys can grow some things that we can't grow down here.
Yeah, I think we probably
are. Japanese plum's not terribly hardy. So it does get a lot of things just because trying to grow those in Wisconsin are kind of pushing their boundaries just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when I see those trees go, it's usually from verticillium wilt.
Okay.
So that's something you might want to try sending in a sample of the tree. And the best thing to do when you send in a sample for verticillium wilt, there's the University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Lab, and they do the testing, and I think the fee is either $15 or $20.
Great.
And all you have to do is there are instructions on their website.
Okay.
And what you'll do is you'll go out to, like, the drip line of the tree, so the edge of where the canopy of the tree is, and just dig down a couple inches and get some roots, and they want those nice fibrous roots. And you just throw those in a bag and mail them off to them, and they'll test them and, you know, look for spores and things like that and let you know for sure if it's a root problem. And what they'll do is they'll tell you if, not just if it's verticillium, but if you have any root problem.
Okay, great. Thank you. I have a second question, and it's concerning hostas. Mine are getting the tall, spiky flowers, and I'm not a fan of those. I'm wondering if I trim those down, if it's going to injure the plant at all.
No, I would just cut them off.
Okay, great.
I would just use some clean pruners just to make sure you're not, you know, if for some reason there was a disease or a virus or anything that's just starting in any of those, you wouldn't want to move it around. But, you know, use some sharp pruners and snip them off and clean your pruners between plants.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Peggy, good luck to you. Thanks for the call. And, Kristen, what causes blossom end rot in tomatoes?
Calcium. It's actually a nutrient deficiency. We see it usually in the spring when the soils aren't warm enough.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with a lot of the nutrients is until the soil gets warm enough for the tomatoes actually to bring the nutrients in out of the soil, the plants suffer from a lot of nutrient deficiencies. You'll see the leaves turn pink from phosphorus deficiency, or usually the first few fruits off of a tomato plant might have blossom end rot, and that's that fuzzy blackening of the bottom of the fruit. But the rest of the tomato's fine, and you can just cut that off and eat it.
Sounds good. Let's go to the phones and to Jay in Franklin. Jay, what's on your mind today?
Good morning. I have kind of, I think, three questions. I think they all pertain to black walnut trees. I've got a garden that's about 50 feet from the drip line of two black walnuts. And this year I've grown a cucumber plant up about 5 feet. I picked a cucumber off that's probably 8 inches long, and boom, the next day the leaves were all hanging wilted. The same thing, I've got six or seven tomato plants that are all, you know, kaput. And my zucchini they grow about three inches long, and then they start rotting back. I haven't gotten a zucchini that's 6 inches long yet. What's the problem?
I think you have a whole host of problems.
Jay, you didn't mention that you had a black walnut tree right sitting in the middle of this, did you?
No, on the edge. I've kept my garden as far away. Well, okay, 30 years ago, I didn't have any problem. Now I'm getting it.
Yeah, I mean, those roots are growing, and as they age and the tree gets older, the roots get farther and farther away from the tree. I heard one estimate that the roots of a tree go five times its height out. So it might have just taken them a while to get there.
Okay.
The tomatoes are definitely a problem with the roots of black walnuts put out something called juglone. And it's toxic to a lot of different plants, and tomatoes are there's a handful of them that are really seriously affected. So I've never seen anybody have real success with tomatoes that close to a black walnut tree. But you can definitely put up a raised bed or try one of those contraptions where you grow your tomatoes upside down or in a container or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend that.
But now what about zucchini?
Well, zucchini, I think you have a different problem.
Oh.
So zucchini has two different kind of flowers on it. It has male flowers and female flowers. You're never going to get any zucchini out of the first flush of flowers because they're usually all male and they don't produce fruit. And then the second flush, basically what happens if you don't have enough bees in there to pollinate, you won't completely pollinate the fruit. So the zucchini will start growing, but if it's not properly pollinated or if it's not getting enough water, you'll see the tip of it start to turn brown and rot, and it rots back towards the stem.
Right.
Yeah, so it's either water or pollination.
Oh.
So you either have to, step up on the water or find a way to attract bees into your yard. And if you want to do that, there's some really great stuff online about building mason bee houses, and you can just put those like on the fence on the side of their yard and attract pollinators that way.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Thanks, Jay. We appreciate your call. And had an email from Sandy in Superior wondering, when do you trim a burning bush, in spring or in fall?
I would do that when it's dormant. It's easiest to do after the leaves drop because you can see into it then.
Mm-hmm.
Burning bushes just have so many leaves, it's really hard to see what you're doing when the leaves are on it. So I would wait until it goes dormant and then just find a day that's a little bit warmer and go outside and trim it then.
Okay, Kathy in La Crosse is next. Let's give you a chance. Hi.
Hi there. I've got many, many maple trees. They're about 30 years old. I think they're sugar maples. I'm not entirely positive. And I've noticed that there are certain splotches about 2 feet in diameter at the ends of branches that are just totally dying. And I think that I might have seen, I don't know, it kind of looked like spider webs, but an awful lot of them in the top of one of the trees before the leaves came out. Could it be gypsy moths?
You don't usually see webbing with gypsy moths. You know, it definitely could be some caterpillars or something like that. Hopefully they're just chewing the leaves off. Usually most of the caterpillars that, attack leafy trees aren't going to kill them. So, something might be chewing the leaves off. If it's maples, and when did you say this started?
Well, I noticed it this year.
Okay, at what point this year?
I noticed the clump of spider webby material toward the top of the tree over the winter.
Okay.
And now, of course, with all the leaves, you can't even see it.
Yeah, but the branches that look like they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
Did they leaf out at all this year?
Did they leaf out this year?
Did you have any leaves on them at all?
No.
Okay. And where are those branches on the tree? Are they just kind of sporadic, or are they north, south of the tree, top, bottom?
Oh, bottom of the tree. I don't know what direction.
Okay. Well, that's good news. When things start dying from the top, especially maples, usually that means it's a root rot problem, and that's by far the most common problem in maples. So if it's not dying in that direction, that's a good sign that it's not something really serious. The branches that didn't leaf out this year, have you been getting much rain the last couple years?
Excuse me?
Have you gotten much rain the last couple years?
I just moved here a year ago, and yes, in fact, because I'm in La Crosse, we practically had floods 2 years ago.
Okay. Well, yeah, we had floods too, but then we didn't have any rain for pretty much the rest of the summer, so it's kind of a hit and miss kind of a thing.
It's on a sprinkler system, so it's got water.
Okay. There's a possibility what you saw was from some kind of a cankerworm. You know, maples get both fall and spring cankerworms, and they, produce some webbing, and you'll see some, but usually all they do is chew off the leaves, and I'd be surprised to see them so high up in the tree.
Okay.
You have some branches, about what percentage would you say of the branches are dead now?
It's really just entire branch. That's what's strange. It's just like a foot square area on certain spots, and it's on multiple trees, too.
Yeah, it's a discoloration, though, like a splotch?
No, the leaves are just gone.
Okay. I guess I guess if you're watering and it hasn't refoliated, you know, if they haven't, you haven't gotten leaves at all this year, then I would have somebody come and look at what, this is an odd problem. It doesn't fit kind of the standard symptoms of anything that's common, so I would have somebody look at it.
Okay, great. Thank you for your help.
All right, Kathy, good luck to you with your trees. This seems to be a common symptom that leaves are either gone or turning different colors.
Well, we have a lot of, like, early fall coloration. A lot of people will have problems with the leaves turning red. I suspect up north that's especially a problem this year because they haven't had much rain at all. But whenever you see that early fall color, usually it's an indication that your tree's under some kind of a stress.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you can water it out of that and reestablish it, you know, the tree is healthy before it goes into dormancy, which is really the best thing to do for the tree.
We're talking with Kristen Krukowski, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, about Garden Talk, taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or, of course, you can send an email to us at talk@wpr.org. And Marianne in Edgerton is next. Hi.
Hi. I have a witch hazel bush. It's its third year, and it is being attacked by Japanese beetles. I don't set the traps. You know, I heard your initial comment. I have tried a spray that says it's supposed to be for Japanese beetles, and I've also just washed it, you know, with soap and water. I mean, poured it over. How can I get rid of them? They're just making lace out of all my leaves. And then from what I found on the Internet, like a double-barrel question here, mm-hmm. I understand that they grow, or however it is, they multiply in the ground. So how can I attack that problem, too?
Okay, let's start with the first one.
Okay.
So Japanese beetles, you know, this is kind of the beginning of them, and they are going to get worse as the season progresses. And the problem with the spraying of them is that you're only going to kill whatever you hit at the time you spray it. So usually they're most active around noon when it's hottest out. So usually what we recommend is if your bush is at the point where it definitely needs to be sprayed or it's going to compromise itself, then go out there with something like Carbaryl, which is sold at 7, and use that and spray them. And you might be out there spraying them more than once a day on a regular basis. And you're going to need to do that until they either somehow find their way someplace else or their season ends, which will probably not be until the end of August.
Is it
Carbaryl? It's sold as 7, S-E-V-I-N.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, you know, and there's not a ton of really great chemicals out there for it. They have kind of hard shells and wings, so it makes it a little bit tricky. But, you know, you should be able to kill them with the spray. You're just going to have to repeat it on a regular basis. The better option is for next year, putting on a soil drench. It's commonly sold as tree and shrub care, but it's sold under a lot of different names now. And the active ingredient in that is imidacloprid. And basically what you're going to do is you mix it with water and you apply it as a soil drench this fall. And what that's going to do is it's going to go up into the tree, and then when your bush leafs out next year, it's going to be in the leaves. So when the Japanese beetles land on it and decide they're going to eat, it'll kill them right away.
When do I do that again? I'm sorry.
I would check the back of the label, but for the most part, most of the time they recommend that you apply it in the fall. But since this is such a late insect and it's a small bush, you might be able to get away doing it early in the spring. It really has to do with how, you know, the caliper of the tree, how big around it is.
Okay.
You know, the bigger the plant you're trying to treat. So if you were trying to treat a big old oak, I would definitely tell you to put it on in the fall. But
all
since
right.
It's a witch hazel and those don't tend to be nearly so big, you might be able to delay until spring. But regardless, if you do it this fall, it won't help you until next year.
What do I do with the leaves that are now lacy? Do I just leave those on, or do I take them off?
No, you can leave them on. It's not going to hurt the tree, and you know, they're just kind of unsightly.
And what do I do about the larvae in the ground?
Okay, do you water your lawn?
Pardon me?
Do you irrigate your lawn?
Okay.
No, I'm just asking, do you water your lawn? Do you let it go dormant, or do you water it?
Only if it's super, super dry.
Okay.
No, I let the rain do its thing.
Japanese beetles, in general, prefer irrigated turf. They need a certain amount of moisture. So what happens is the beetles emerge usually mid to late June. We don't usually see them around really hot and heavy until about 4th of July. And then about 2 weeks after they emerge, they start mating and laying eggs.
Okay.
So it's usually that July and August period where they're laying their eggs. So if you're not irrigating your turf then, your lawn, uh-huh. and there's not enough moisture in there, and if you have, like, sandier soils, they just instinctively know that, you know, their eggs aren't going to survive there and they won't lay their eggs there. So that's a really good cultural control for avoiding that.
Okay.
If you find that you have them, if you get to the point where you know you have them, and you'll know you have them because the grass will start turning brown in patches, and then it'll get real spongy, and you'll be able to roll the grass back because all the roots will be gone. It'll roll like carpet.
And so then what do I do?
If you have those, you're gonna apply the same chemical as you would for the bush, but there's a turf formulation. So basically, you just go over your whole lawn with that, and then that will kill the little grubs when they're in the ground.
Do they have any natural predators? The reason I'm asking, in this same area, last year I had a lot of garden snakes. I haven't seen a one this year in that area.
And the real problem with the Japanese beetles is that they eat 300 different things. So they're not really picky eaters. They seem to be really good at reproducing. And the last 2 years we've had such good populations because we've had snow cover on the ground. They only really survive in the ground because that's where they all are all winter, is underground, just waiting to emerge in the summer. So they hang out underground, and they'll only take temperatures, I think it's down to like 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So if we have a nice snow cover and they're insulated all winter and the ground doesn't freeze really hard, then we have really good Japanese beetle populations. But if we had a snowless winter and a lot of cold temperatures, then the Japanese beetle populations would drop.
Good luck to you, Marianne. Thanks very much for the call. The number for you, 1-800-642-1234. Email from Bev from Lake Geneva. We have ever-bearing raspberry plants that are well over 50 years old. The last 5 to 6 years, half of the patch does fine, producing a crop twice a year. The other side grows to about 5 to 6 feet tall and never produces any berries. They all get the equal amount of sun. We trimmed them all down in late winter to about 2 to 3 feet tall. What do you suspect the problem could be?
Well, if they're trimming them down, you know, if they hadn't trimmed them down, I would just have recommended that they go through and they trim them all down and let them kind of start over. It just might be too much competition. If they're in there too tightly now and there's too much competition, they might not be doing well, but they might have to go in there and renovate those beds.
All right. Let's go to Kent in Milwaukee next. Hi, Kent.
Hi. I transplanted a lilac bush late spring. And since then, the leaves have been paler than another lilac, an established lilac that I have in my yard. I've kept it well watered. It's mulched. I've fertilized it a little bit. And then, in addition, there appears to be an insect-eating lobe-shaped parts of the leaves out.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering.
Well, I would back off on the fertilizing. Try not to fertilize, you know, any woody plants you put in initially, because they really have to get used to where they've been put. You know, they've been in a nice environment. They've got that nice soil that they were put into. They've been fertilized and watered every day. And then you put them into, you know, regular soil, and they're a little bit shocked by that. So it's going to take a little while for that lilac to kind of get used to where it's at and to start greening up and looking good again.
Okay.
So just give it some time. As long as you're doing the 1 inch of water a week thing and it's mulched, I think it'll be fine. I've got a couple really sad-looking plants at my house right now because they were recently transplanted. And it's just going to take a while before they get used to their new home.
Okay.
But have you seen the bugs?
I have not.
Is it eating a lot of the plant?
No, it's just numerous leaves on it, and they have very distinctive, it's almost like a small animal has come and taken a bite out of it. It's mm-hmm. a very smooth cut and, you know, like a full moon or a half moon shape.
There's only a few things that I would worry about insect-wise on lilac, and that doesn't sound like any of them, so I wouldn't be concerned about that. If you're really curious as to what it is, feel free to call the Insect Diagnostic Lab. Phil Pelletieri can answer questions faster than I can even get them out of my mouth. So I'm sure that if you're curious, he'd be more than happy to answer that question.
Okay. So I should actually look for a physical insect on the plant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you can find it, that's the easiest way to do. Any county extension, if you actually have either a picture or an actual insect, then I'm sure any county extension office that has horticulture services could help you.
Okay.
But if you can't ever find a bug and you just have notches in a leaf, then you're probably going to have to talk to Phil.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Kent, thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you. Sarah from Buffalo Grove, Illinois, said that she's successfully grown Jack in the Pulpit from seeds and has a few pointers for the earlier call, that Jack in the Pulpit contains calcium oxalate that may irritate the skin, so wear gloves while harvesting the red berries. Before planting, remove the red flesh from the seeds. She does this by putting the berries in a plastic Ziploc bag and squeezing the flesh from the seeds. You don't want those seeds to dry out, so plant them right away, covering with 1/4 to 1/2 inch of soil. So that's the advice that we've gotten from Sarah. Sue in Madison, let's give you a chance. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My concern is a flowering crab in my front yard, so it gets good morning sun. And I'm aware of the scab disease that usually comes each year, and I try to rake up all those leaves so water doesn't drip into the ground through those. But right now, I had a beautiful bloom earlier this season, and the leaves look terrible. They look scabby, but I've lost a lot of them, and I'm wondering, this seems a little bit early to lose them, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts.
We had a very nice, long, cool, wet spring, and apple scab just absolutely thrives in that kind of weather, so we really gave it, you know, as much of an opportunity to get severe this year as we possibly could. So my guess is that you just got a really bad infection this year.
Okay.
So it's nothing new. You know, do what you're doing and rake up those leaves. That's probably the best thing you can do. But, you know, really with the older crab apples that aren't scab resistant, you know, there's not much else you can do, because I really don't recommend that people go into a spray schedule, because then you're spraying every 7 to 10 days for like 2 months a year.
Uh-huh.
And that's just, you know, that's too many chemicals to be putting near your home.
Right. Okay. In terms of water, what do you suggest?
One inch of water a week.
Okay.
So if you can do that via soaker hose, that's probably the best way, because it soaks in really slow and you don't have a lot of runoff, and you don't really have to do anything. You just turn it on at a kind of a low pressure and leave it for a few hours.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right, good luck, Sue. Thanks for the call. Kristen Krukowski, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, is our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network, and glad to have you with us for today's edition of Garden Talk. We've had lots of things to talk about, including Japanese beetles, trees, lilacs, flowering crabs, and we'll take your questions as well at 800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. Kristen, we had an email from Sandy in Fountain City, Wisconsin. And she has a crab tree that's about 9 years old that has always looked very healthy. It blossomed this spring and had all of its leaves. Now she's noticing there are a couple branches that are dead. The leaves are all brown from the middle of the branch to the top. From the middle down, looks fine. Also, a few other areas where there's a small branch here or there that is dying. And she wonders whether or not this tree would be okay next year. What do you think?
I would check and make sure that it's not a disease called fire blight. It's a bacterial problem that happens, especially when we have spring hail or some other kind of storm that kind of damages branches, and a little bacteria can get in there. And, you know, the distinctive sign of that disease is something called the shepherd's crook. It's a branch that kind of bends over in a half circle, and mm-hmm. that'll look really dark brown, almost like it's been burned. If she has that, then all she really needs to do is prune out those areas. I think the recommendation is 8 inches back from where the problem is, and make sure she cleans her pruners either with a 10% bleach solution or some kind of spray with alcohol in it in between the cuts, so she doesn't spread that around. But that's a really common problem with apples and crab apples. But if it's not that, then I would just prune out the dead parts, and, you know, things will probably be fine next year.
Let's go to Chris in Green Bay next. Chris, what can we do for you?
Hi. We have enjoyed our asparagus this year very much. It's been a good production year. But I've never heard or read how to tell when to stop picking.
They'll get kind of bigger and woodier.
Okay.
The actual asparagus will. And then it'll start producing kind of flowers and like a leafy canopy.
Right.
Over that. So at that point, what it's doing is it's preparing for next year. Those leaves are taking in the energy, and they're storing all that energy in the roots so that you can have a good harvest next year. So you can't continue picking it through the summer. So once you start getting once they start getting woody and you start getting the leaves and the flowers coming out, you should stop picking.
So stop picking on all the plants at that time.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
One more quick question. Can I compost the leaves of the rhubarb plant?
Are you just composting and using them as a soil amendment?
Yes.
Yes, that's fine. They are very toxic, so, you know, what we worry about is people eating them. But if you're not, you know, if there's not any reason to believe that anybody's going to be eating anything associated with them, then they're fine as a kind of green manure.
That's it. Okay, very good. Thank
Chris,
you.
Chris, sure. Thanks for the call. 1-800-642-1234 is our number, and we're going to Aaron in Green Bay next. Aaron, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question. I had planted a little bit late this year about 50 daylilies in around my restaurant in here in Green Bay, and the leaves got really long because I'm assuming they were pot bound for so long because I didn't get them in until probably late June, and they were flowering when I put them in, and the gentleman that I got them from said that it would be okay to cut the plants off like halfway after they had flowered, and I'd never heard of that before, and I just wanted to make sure that that's something that's okay, that I'm not going to cut all my plants off and they're going to die and not come back next year.
No, usually daylilies, you know, depending on what kind you got, they're probably going to bloom for quite a while.
They bloom for about maybe 3 weeks. They were already blooming. So,
okay. I would wait until they go dormant to cut them back.
Okay.
I really would. Is there going to be a problem? Probably not. But whenever you make those cuts into plants, you open up wounds.
Right.
So there's always the potential that you're going to get some kind of disease or bacterial problem, especially when you have all of those cut all at once. And they're still kind of dealing with transplant shock.
Right.
It's kind of jarring.
Okay.
So I would avoid it until they go dormant. But, you know, I don't think that the likelihood you're going to do huge damage if you do them now is that great.
Right. Okay. That's what I need to know. Thank you very much.
All right, Aaron. Good luck to you. Thanks for the call. We had a call from Dave in Monona who wondered, my tomatoes have this brown spot on the bottom. What is it? Would you say it's the same thing as blossom end rot?
No. There are a lot of tomatoes are kind of fraught with problems, but they get something called scald, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if that particular part of the tomato just was getting too much sun, because usually the tomatoes are covered by the leaves, you might get a little, light tan, and it almost looks papery, but that's fine. He can just cut that off, and it'll be fine. It's a little unusual, but not uncommon.
Okay. Stella in Sturgeon Bay is next. Hi, Stella. What's on your mind?
Hi. When I turned the radio on, you were giving, somebody had called in apparently about their zucchini failing to fruit, and your response was that it would be either a case of water or lack of pollination. And you gave the instructions for water, and then you said on pollination you need to attract more bees. And I just wanted to give the tip that my husband hand pollinates our zucchini. And the way that he does that is he picks a male blossom with a long stem, and the male blossoms are easy to identify because they have a pistil or a stamen?
Oh, the anthers.
The anther.
Yeah,
okay.
The little polleny things.
Yeah, the little pollen stem that sticks out in the middle of the blossom. So he picks a male blossom with a long stem and tears off the petals so that you just have the anther sticking out. And then he goes around and he just gently rubs that around inside of the female blossoms. And the female blossoms are real easy to identify because they have a little miniature fruit at the base of the blossom. And just make sure that the pollen from the anther gets well distributed inside the female blossom. And we're always inundated unless we have some insect invasion.
Yep, that's a really great comment. We actually, my husband has a 40-acre vegetable farm, so I never think of the things that you can do on a small scale very well. So thanks for letting us know.
Okay.
Appreciate the call, Stella. Thanks very much. Jerry up in Woodruff and Minocqua says that a well-meaning friend had given him one of those hanging plant devices that seemed to be one of the latest gardening fads, hung it up with a very healthy and expensive tomato plant, did well for several weeks, but about the time it began to blossom, a few of the bottom leaves began to turn yellow. He left for about a week. The plant was cared for by a relative. When he returned, found that fully the bottom third of the leaves are yellowing or yellow, and I have a lot of blossoms and several small tomatoes on the upper part of the plant. Any suggestions to what that problem might be?
It's a little tricky. There are a lot of diseases that plants get. It could also be either over or under watering.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what I would do is just kind of pick off the yellowing leaves, you know, and it's important what kind of soil you put in those hanging bags, because if it's too heavy of a soil, it's going to hold water and it's going to get real mucky. If it's too light of a soil, it won't hold enough and they won't get enough water. So I would keep an eye on how much water they're getting, but just because they're yellowing from the bottom doesn't mean that it's necessarily a disease. I would think that it's more of a cultural problem at that point.
All right. Back to the phones we go, and let's go to Keith in Watertown. Hello, Keith.
Hi. My problem was, I should say, I had two pear trees, and they were blooming. One of them had flowers on even. And the leaves were all coming out fine. And then all of a sudden, the one with flowers, I believe it was, started turning black, all the leaves. And then the other one turned black, and all the leaves, or half the leaves on one of them fell off, and the other one, all the leaves fell off. They just blackened up.
Do you know what kind of pear it was?
One was a Bartlett, and one was a speckled. Speckled something.
And how long they've been in the ground?
Actually, I just planted them. I had them over the winter in 5-gallon buckets. They were in 5-gallon buckets, and they had blossomed. They actually had leaves on when they were in a 5-gallon bucket. They were from, you know.
Where were the buckets all winter?
Just out.
Okay, but above ground?
Above ground.
Yeah, that might be the problem. Being outside above ground, they might have, you know, had some serious root issues going on because, you know, those pails, you know, when they're above ground, they freeze.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have gotten some frost damage, and there was a little bit of life in them in the spring, and they had enough life to kind of push that last flower, which is always what a tree wants to do, is try to get some seed out there before it dies.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably had enough energy to push out that last flower, but I'm not really sure that they're going to come back from that. I would take a look. I would dig them up and take a look and see if they have any roots left. And if they do, then keep watering them and see if they come back.
I don't think they will. The leaves is totally gone. So,
mm-hmm.
So that was damaged from...
Yeah, I mean, probably froze the roots off of them.
Froze the roots off of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Keith. Good luck to you. And if you'd like to join in, the number is 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Kristen Krukowski. Let's go to Margaret in Pewaukee next. Hello, Margaret.
Hello. My questions concern trees. In front of my home, there is a silver maple, and it has been diagnosed by an arborist as having anthracnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've read about this disease, this fellow told me that you should just leave it alone, and if we don't have another bad spring, it should bounce back and not show any signs of the disease next year. And yet there seems to be some conflict. Some people say you're supposed to cut out the damaged part. And also, since this tree is hanging over the roof, I've been told, well, you really should cut that back because you're going to have problems with your roof if you don't cut back your tree. But I said, well, this year we shouldn't touch the tree because of its disease. What do you think? Should we prune it back now, so late in the year, or what?
How much of the tree do you think had anthracnose?
Was just one giant limb.
I think you're fine. Anthracnose is just a cosmetic disease. It doesn't harm the tree at all. It's just this particular year it got really ugly, and it was really bad on silver maples and some of the maples that have silver maples apparent. So it looked really bad this year, but we have anthracnose every single spring. It seems to affect different trees, different years, differently. So really, all I would advise you to do on the anthracnose is rake up all those leaves and get them out of there, just so that you don't have that anthracnose around next spring. And that, you know, with just one big limb affected, I think you're fine to prune back. If you had had a really severe infection, then I would have just told you to water and wait a year until you pruned so it could regain some of its energy and its stores.
You've been listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kristen Krakowski, Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, our guest. After the latest news, we'll be talking more with Kristen Krakowski on Garden Talk. And if you'd like to join in, the number 1-800-642-1234. In the first hour, we talked about Japanese beetles, catalpa trees, Jack in the Pulpits, Japanese plum trees, black walnut trees and their effect on cucumber and tomato plants, ground covers to pick from, maples turning leaves, lilacs, flowering crabs, asparagus, zucchini, and pear trees. And we'd love to know what's on your mind. And you can call 1-800-642-1234. You can also go to WPR.org. And join our online community of listeners. One of the questions on the Larry Mueller Show is, what's your favorite garden plant? We'd like to know, and that's at WPR.org. We'll be back with Kristen Krakowski and take more of your calls after this look at the latest news from NPR. Good afternoon, Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on this edition of Garden Talk, and happy to have you joining along today. Kristen Krakowski, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, is our guest. And again, Kristen, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Glad to be here.
We had an email from Brian, who is up in Ashland and has three Spirea gold mound plants that have grown quite tall and are blocking a window. When would be the best time of the year to prune these back, and how much can he take out of the plants at any one time?
Spirea, kind of a special story. They can take quite heavy pruning. I would wait until they went dormant, and they actually can be cut down to a couple inches above the ground if he needs to. But if he's just looking to cut them down a little bit and shape them, then I would go down to the base of the plant and take out some of the larger branches.
Okay. We go back to the phones and to Rose from Glenwood City, who's been waiting a while. Rose, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm so glad I got through. I would like to ask about my pagoda dog tree, pagoda dogwood, which we dug up in our woods here, and I've had, I'm trying to think, maybe at least 6 years, but it's just full of disease. The leaves keep looking blighty, and then the branch tips get black. And I've got dead parts on the tree, and I think, oh, no, I'm going to lose it. And then it starts to grow some more. And is this something easy to treat? I have no clue what it is.
When you moved it, what kind of environment did you move it to?
Well, it's the north side of our home, so it's not full sun all day. And okay. I try to water it well, but it's, you know, not woodsy like what we took it out of.
Yeah, I would continue to kind of nurse it along. It's just not quite happy in its environment. You know, continue to keep it watered.
But it's turning, the branches turn black.
Is it the tips of it are the problem, the tips of the branches?
Yeah, or a whole branch. And it's never, at this rate, it's never going to achieve any size. I mean, unless, like you say, it just,
I'm not sure it's happy where it's at.
Off. Pardon?
I'm not sure it's happy where it's at. The only other thing that I would check it for is some kind of a root rot, because that might be the problem. But I'm really guessing it just doesn't like where it's at.
Okay.
You know, it it was probably really happy in the wooded setting where it was, where it got a lot more dappled sunlight and it was a cooler ground and things like that.
Okay.
But if you want a pagoda dogwood, you might try actually just going to a garden center and getting one. They breed them a little bit hardier.
Oh.
So you might have better luck. What grow zone are you in? Where are you at again?
Yeah, I'm in the coldest part of Zone 4.
Okay. But you should be fine in a Zone 4 with a pagoda.
Yeah, and it was in my woods. There's lots of them out there.
The nice thing about the ones that you'll go and get at a garden center is there's some of them, especially the ones that are carried around here, were specifically bred for hardiness. You might have a lot better luck because they're absolutely beautiful trees.
They are. Yes, I love the form. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Rose, thank you for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. Charles is next in Madison. Charles, what can we do for you?
Good afternoon. You have been recommending the use of about an inch of water a week, and then you mentioned soaker hoses, and I'm confused about how closely to snake together the various parts of the soaker hoses to get a good coverage of water, and how long to do that.
A little bit's going to depend on how much pressure you use. When I use my circo hose, I put them, when you're turning that spigot on the outside, I turn it maybe a third. So really low pressure and a really slow drip. And what I do is I make a big loop around where the edge of the canopy is, that drip line of the tree. I just make a big loop around the drip line of the tree, and I personally run mine for about 3 hours, and that seems to equal an inch of water.
Okay.
But you're going to have to try to gauge it yourself. What you can do is slip a tuna can underneath your soaker hose.
Yes.
And just let it drip and then just time it and see how long it takes to get to an inch of water. And then you'll know. And then you'll be able to say, I need exactly 2 hours and 45 minutes every time I turn it on.
But then how far away from the soaker hose will that inch percolate?
Most of the roots of the tree are going to be located around that drip line, because if you think about it, when it rains, most of the rainwater doesn't fall underneath the canopy. It's falling on the outside, and that's where most of it falls. So as long as you're using that soaker hose to hit that drip line, it should be enough water for the tree to be fine.
I'm using it for hydrangea beds and for various areas where there are clematis. So then I should probably just snake it through those areas.
I snake them through, and what I do on some of my beds is I'll have two of them going together. You can get those splitters and just have two soaker hoses going, and then I just do two rows, and that way they're getting hit on both sides. And you don't have to use nearly as much hose that way.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck to you, Charles. The number for you is 1-800-642-1234. On this edition of Garden Talk, Kristen Krukowski, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, is our guest, and we're going to Rizard next in Viroqua. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
The gentleman called about that pear, Barlett pear. Well, I have the same problem. I purchased it from the nursery, and I planted it, and it took off like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
But it grew, started branching out. The branches grew about 2 inches long, and then I noticed it started getting the black tips, and it went black all the way, and looked like all the branches just wilted, and they're just dying. I don't know did I overwater it? Because I watered every day.
Though? Would you say that the branches look like they were burned? Are they that black?
They're black. I mean, they're black, yes.
Yeah, if there's any life left in it, I would send it to the disease diagnostic lab, because if they're really black, that usually, tells me it's some kind of bacterial infection, and it definitely could be the fire blight I was talking about earlier with the apple trees. But, mm-hmm. It's an unusual thing to happen, and if there are trees that are supposed to be hardy here, every once in a while somebody plants something that's a grow zone 6 or 7 and more suited for maybe southern Indiana, and they bring it up here and plant it, and then it does the same thing because it won't take the late frosts that we get. So sometimes late frosts will cause that problem, but it sounds like this didn't happen until after it warmed up. Is that right?
Yeah. I planted it about maybe 4 weeks ago, and the first 2 weeks, all I got is just a barlet. There was no dirt on it, and I planted it, and it took off like I say, it was like went crazy. I mean, it started growing, and I was so happy about it. And then, 2 weeks later, it just kind of everything died down.
Yeah, I would snip one of those branches off and send it to the disease lab because they're going to have the best, you know, it's just so difficult to vision it over the phone.
Okay.
So I would send it in because they're going to have the best ability to be able to, you know, look at the little spores and figure out exactly what it is.
Okay.
But, you know, hopefully I hear back somehow what happened because I'm really curious.
Yeah, it seems like it's a subject on the black. It's not just Bartlett pair, but apparently all the other callers having problems with black leaves.
Yeah, and that's very odd.
All right, Reiser, good luck to you, and we appreciate hearing from you. We're going to Pat in Oregon next. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good.
I'm calling regarding my burning bush, my euonymus. It's probably 15 to 20 years old. It's planted out in full sun all by itself. It's been beautiful every year since I planted it and gotten nice and big. And now this year, only a couple of branches leafed out, and the rest of the tree has nothing. And some of those leaves have already turned red and died off. And I'm wondering if it got just stressed from the August drought last summer or what, and if there's anything I can do to revive it. I'm willing to leave it in, you know, obviously I'm going to leave it in the ground for another year and see what happens, but if there's something I can be doing now to help it, I'd sure like to know.
And how long had it been in the ground?
Oh, at least 15 years.
And is it anywhere near a road or a sidewalk or anything like that?
It's, I would say, 5 or 6 feet away from a narrow concrete sidewalk.
Okay.
Which was put in 8 years ago, and it's been blooming fine for all those 8 years.
Okay. And do you salt that sidewalk at all?
I'm sorry?
You use salt on that sidewalk at all?
No.
Okay.
We do not. We shovel it, but we don't use salt on it.
Okay. It's just sometimes when plants seem to die of drought stress, what can happen is if there's near a road or near a sidewalk where salt is used, that salt getting down into the soil can cause the same, it makes the plant, it causes a drought problem in the plant because of the water regulation in the soil. But,
yeah. Never use salt. We used salt once last winter on a sidewalk when it was so dangerously icy that the mailman would kill himself.
Yeah, so, yeah, that would be bad. The only other thing that I might think about is crown gall on that. So I would check down at the base of the plant and see if you either, well, I would check for some, to see if you have any kind of, kind of bulbous areas or eruptions or, things that look unusual that doesn't look like it's part of the actual crown of the tree. So right there at that base where the soil line is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something called crown gall, and basically, that can end up killing your burning bush. I'd be surprised if it just was just, a month or two of drought, especially since it's been there so long.
Yeah.
Usually it takes a lot more than that to kill a tree or a shrub.
We had a long drought, and I put a soaker hose under it, and I let it go, once a week for quite a while. And then last summer it was beautiful. It turned red in the fall like it's supposed to, and did its own thing. And this year I was just astounded when I only got these couple of three clumps of leaves, and I was worried that it was because I didn't put the soaker hose under it in August last year.
And I'd be surprised if it took that little. I think there's probably something else going on. But if you go out there and you bend the branches that don't have leaves on them and they snap like dry twigs, then you can be assured it's not coming back.
Well, I did that with a couple of end branches one day a couple of weeks ago, and they sort of bent. They didn't
okay.
really snap
well, even
off.
If you can scrape your nail on them and if they're still a little bit green underneath there, then I would have some faith. Make sure you don't fertilize it. But I would make sure that it gets enough water this year.
Okay.
And you still have a shot of getting it.
Anything. Stuff grows in spite of me, not because of me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you take some eternal optimism then to continue gardening. Carl in Orfordville, let's give you a chance. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Question I have has to do with hybrid blackberries. And these are the large fruit shrub. I've had them for 5 years, and the patch has grown and spread, but it seems like every time this year, at any rate, it really started throwing some blossoms and had fruit. But every time the fruited branches would look like they're coming along, and next time I look at them, they would dry up all the way down to the root and die back. And I'm concerned because it doesn't seem to be any kind of a, it doesn't seem to be affecting the whole bush. You know what I mean? Everything else is growing except for the ones that get fruit on them.
Okay, what I would check is I would go down along those ones that are either dying or dead and see if you can find any holes in those. Raspberries get, you know, most of the time we call blackberries the really black raspberries in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So I would look, raspberries get, I think, three or four different borers, and what those little guys do is they enter into the cane and they dig a little hole and they eat out the inside. And then the way you'll know that it's a borer, usually what happens is that, you know, the tip starts to kind of wilt,
mm-hmm.
and then it dies back.
Okay.
So I would take a look. And if you do have those, you know, they're probably the best thing to do, you know, on a cultural level is to go through and you can, like, till around the bushes, you know, get not a composter, but just, you know, turn that soil and till in between.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of time what happens is that those guys will pupate in the soil, so their little cocoons will be in there, and if you turn the soil, that kind of takes them out of there, and they end up freezing.
Okay.
So you can try that. If you get to the point where you have a better idea of exactly what borer is, then you can always either go online to the learningstore.uwx.edu, and they have a really good publication about raspberry pests for home gardeners, and that will give you recommendations of how to ID it and what you can do about it.
Okay, is moving the patch to a different location would...
I don't think that's necessary at this point. I think there's some other stuff you can try before you move it, because that's a big job.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'd try some other stuff before you got to that point, because I really think you probably just have an insect problem.
Okay.
Okay?
All right,
good.
Carl,
good
luck to you. Thanks for the call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Tony is next in Black River Falls. Hello, Tony.
Hello. I like to save seeds and try to plant them in the spring. Chinese lantern failed this spring when I tried to plant some seeds that I saved last fall. I wondered if there are any special treatments it needs.
You know, to be honest, I'm not sure on that plant. That's one I would call the extension office and see if they could look that up for you.
Okay, and a couple others. I've had limited success with Fraser fir and cedar. I wonder if they need special care during the dormant winter before they're planted in the spring, or...
No, both of those are really hard to get from seed. Most of those are propagated from cuttings. So even nurseries don't usually plant those from seed.
Okay.
They're really hard to get to survive that way. That's why, you know, a lot of plants people do from cuttings and propagate that way just because they're so hard to get them from seed. And I know cedar is one of them.
The cedar tree?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
A
fraser, and firs are a little tricky, too.
Okay. And is there internet access for information?
I don't think that the university has anything specifically on seed starting, but I would definitely check on the internet to see if you could find something from one of the other universities.
Okay.
There's a lot of universities, especially with the Fraser firs, that deal more with Christmas trees than we do up here.
Yeah.
All right, Tony. Good luck to you. Thanks very much. And let's go to Brett and see what's on his mind. Let's see here. Brett in White Lake. Go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I would just like to comment a little bit on soaker hoses. I live in the North Woods here where gardening is difficult because of all the critters and everything. So I have a fence around about a 14 by 25-foot garden. And I took a soaker hose and I attached it to the fencing around my garden with zip ties. And because I have a well, there's a certain degree of or amount of particulate matter that comes through the garden hose side of my water system. And I found that you can take a very small needle-like object, not quite as small as a needle. I absconded one of my son's blowgun darts, and I can make openings in the soaker hose wherever I need them to squirt on my various plants. I have Brussels sprouts, asparagus, chives, peppers, and tomatoes and stuff. And if you're careful about the way you put the holes in the soaker hose, you can make them squirt just about wherever you want, and it does a wonderful job of irrigating our garden. And also, the Miracle-Gro style bottle feeders that meter a certain quantity of fertilizer through a hose as you spray your garden, you can remove that front spray nozzle and actually attach that to your soaker hose and feed at the same time that you're irrigating. So I thought that I would slide that idea along to you in hopes that any of you or your listeners could use that.
If only you could tell me how to weed that way.
Yeah, that would be... Well, what I use is cardboard in between my rows, and then I always... I go through about every couple of days and just, you know, chunk up and turn over the soil around the various plants, and that usually, you know, kills the stuff that keeps popping back up.
It sounds like you got this down to an easy thing.
Yeah.
Well, this is our first year trying it, but we've gotten a lot of advice from some very nice neighbors, and our first try is turning out quite well.
Good. Brett, thanks for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. John is next in Appleton. Hello, John.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
I've got a problem. I've got barberry bushes, and on a kind of a random basis, part of the branch will die, like the end of a branch, and the leaves kind of just all of a sudden turn crispy and then eventually fall off. And I'm wondering what you might think that is.
So it's just kind of like a random thing?
Yeah, it's usually not the whole bush. It might be just one spot. And then what I usually do is cut those areas out. And a couple of bushes, though, so much of it happened that I actually lost the whole bush.
Yeah, that's unusual because barberries, there's almost, you know, there's so few things that they get, and, you know, that's not, those aren't the symptoms of anything really common.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they get, you know, they get cedar hawthorn rust and fire blight, but that doesn't sound like either of those problems. My guess would be either, are they watered on a regular basis? I might give that a shot.
I don't really usually put additional water. They've been in the ground probably 10 years.
Okay. I might just try, you know, it might just be a little bit, you know, maybe they're just a little bit dry and some of those branches are dying back that way. But, you know, I'd be surprised if it was anything that was a disease or insect problem. So I'd just look into that and just keep pruning out what you can and hopefully they'll perk up.
Okay. Okay.
All right, John.
Yep.
We got an email from Susie in Milwaukee about an earlier caller's lilac leaves with the distinctive moon and half-moon holes. Wonders maybe leafcutter bees, especially if the hole edges are smooth and don't show teeth marks or
yep,
chew marks.
Yeah, definitely could be.
So that would be one thing to consider as well. We had another email that said from Louise that due to crowding by a growing tree, she needs to transplant several astilbe, Siberian iris, and sedum, as well as some daylilies. And when is the best time to do that?
She's going to want to wait until they're done flowering and then give them some time to kind of recuperate from that. Flowering requires a lot of energy. So once they're done flowering and they have some time to, you know, get their stores ready for the winter, then I would move them this fall. Or she can wait until the spring.
All right.
But I definitely wouldn't do it now.
Joanne in Milwaukee, let's go with you.
Okay, I have a plant. It appeared last year coming out of a forsythia bush, and it had leaves that are shaped like a chapelera, I guess it would say, and it grew about 3 feet tall, and it got these spiral or a curve arc of little flowers that are yellow to pink, and then it got blueberries. And then I had the forsythia bush cut down in the spring. I had the roots taken out, and there was a huge bulb down in there, so I said, well, leave it and let's see what it is. But this thing has grown up now, and it's about almost 5 feet tall. It's got the flowers, these plumes of flowers again, and green berries are starting to form. And I'm wondering if it's a noxious weed. I've tried going to different garden centers. I've gone on the Internet.
In 20 seconds, what do you think it is?
I have no idea.
Okay. So, Joanne, you're going to have to continue searching for the answer here. Thanks so much, Kristen, for being with us today, spending some time. It's been a pleasure, and we'll look forward to another visit.
Thank you.
Kristen Krokowski is the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. She is reachable at kristen.krokowski. That's K-R-I-S-T-I-N, K-R-O-K-O-W-S-K-I at ces.uwex.edu. Coming up Monday, UW Green Bay history professor Kim Nielsen talks about her new book about Helen Keller's teacher called Beyond the Miracle Worker. And then at 11:45 on Monday, the weather guys Steve Ackerman and John Martin will be along. Our thanks to Rachel Owens for on-air production today. I'm Jim Packard. Larry Mueller will return on Monday. And so we hope that you will be with us then here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.